Good evening, and welcome to Midnight Audio Theater, the weekly show where we feature new and original audio dramas, be they adventure, mystery, sci-fi, or comedy. I'm your host, Kathy Ranella. Hello, hello, and good evening, audio drama fans. So great to be back with you tonight with another wonderful evening of new audio drama. We do want to thank you all for your patience last week. We had some technical difficulties. We had not expected to be doing a rerun, but we're back tonight with some new episodes, and we thank you very much for your patience. So tonight, we've got our regular favorites from this past month lined up, ready to go, starting with the mysterious developments of Dr. West as he divulges the wonders of his scientific work. It's more tales from everyone's favorite all-seeing, all-controlling corporation government, Heart Life's Our Fair City, Season 2, Episodes 5 and 6, entitled Herbert West, Prince of Denmark, and She's Alive.
Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by the company you depend upon for all of your greatest needs, Heart Life. These stories are true dramatizations from our fair city's glorious history. So listen and remember. Heart Life, all the life you'll ever need.
Deep beneath the rising beacon of the Heart Life building, in the darkest recesses of the darkest tunnels, one finds the hideouts, lairs, and dens of residents with nefarious purposes. Amongst the entrances of these dark nooks and decrepit holes in the wall, one stands out. Perhaps this is because its occupant has removed every single piece of surveillance equipment. Perhaps it is because its door is a solid piece of wrought iron, with a large knocker held within the image of a human's dead, gaping mouth. More likely, it is because the person who lives there put out a lovely little welcome mat with flowers on it. Upon entering this particular domicile, after wiping our feet, we find Dr. Herbert West deep in thought after his fruitless meeting with Dr. Caligari. He turns to his lab table and speaks.
Thank you. Thank you. Ladies, gentlemen, parts and combinations thereof, what can I say? Am I surprised? How can one be surprised by something one has experienced over and over again? Disappointed? I had hoped this time would be different, had hoped this place, like few others, would be filled with open-minded people, dedicated to the free exploration of science, who were not, well, really quite mean. Is it fate that I am so hounded? Is it my destiny to be constantly faced with the adverse and ignorant? What could I have possibly done in my perversion of the laws of nature to be cursed as I am? If it weren't for my firm scientific certainty that these are merely a series of random, unrelated coincidences, I would wonder such things. Then again, if I did not face such resistance, would I still be me? What if my parents had never grounded me for incorporating the dog and the cat?
Herbert Humilicus West, what have you done this time?
What if I hadn't been expelled from my first city after my amorphous blob creation consumed my entire fourth grade? What if I didn't do everything humanly, and somewhat inhumanly, possible to give my patients a new lease on, let's call it life? Oh, certainly. There have been some setbacks, bumps on the road. The cat and the dog never really got along. A patient or two might have reverted into hulking preternatural forms that absorbed those they touched. And Albuquerque. But that is science. There are no guarantees, no certainty. It is trial and error, informed guesswork. If you aren't constantly in danger, obliterating everything you know, you aren't really doing science. And the one person I meet in this city who I think might understand is rude. Genius is no excuse to be unmannered. Gentle invitations, please and thank you, sharing. Especially sharing. I mastered sharing when I was 3.
Mr. West, did you bring enough conjoined dog cat for the entire class?
No, but with a little improvised surgery, there could be plenty to go around. But no. She's just like everyone else in this place. She has to threaten and plan and be master of all, as if such a thing were possible. Facing her problems by killing them, without class or finesse. She may as well be wearing a lab coat and injecting people with rat flu. There is, of course, another way. A way to demonstrate the futility of trying to conquer the natural world and reveal to her the glory and unending explorations that is true science. A way she herself, in her arrogance, unintentionally provided for in the form of this containment tube. A failure that shall lead her to further discoveries. How very scientific. This is why I have brought you all here, parts of ladies and gentlemen. Today, I am going to need one of you to help me push the frontiers of science once more. The decision has been a difficult one. I just want to say that you are all really great, and I wish I could reanimate each and every one of you. Unfortunately, I just don't have enough containment tubes containing the spark of life to do that at this time. For now, only one of you will do. And that one is... Thank you, Andrew. The lucky reanimatee is... Jane Doe, number 753. Oh, come now. Don't be like that. Give her a hand. Thank you, Andrew. Now, my dear... Say goodbye to your friends and join me in the wonderful world where life becomes death and death becomes not death. I didn't really think that line through. I'll work on that. Anyway, up you go. Here we are. The place where the magic happens. But not really. Magic was really a metaphor for science. Because the science I am to perform is so advanced, to the untrained eye it might appear to be magic. But it's not. It's science. Magic doesn't exist. I ramble when I get excited. I hope you don't mind. It's a fairly simple 3-step process. The first involves the reanimation elixir, a cocktail of chemicals designed to stimulate your medulla, which will be injected into your hindbrain. Now, I am sure you would like to know the contents of the reanimation elixir. And well, you should. Always know what's going into your body. You have that right. Remember that. Sadly, you wouldn't understand it. And not just because you're dead. Many of the chemicals are my own design, made from the rarest elements and objects one can find. My own secret recipe, if you will. We'll just open the tube... Add this to the mixture. Stir briskly for 5 seconds. Voila! You have an elixir the dead will rise for. We just load it all into the syringe. If you have a problem with needles, it may be best to look away. On the count of 3. Ready? 1, 2, I'm just kidding. It's already done. See? That wasn't so bad, now was it? Here, have a sucker. Once you've marinated a bit, we'll irradiate your brain to ionize the formula, then use an electric shock to catalyze the biomechanical reaction until it cascades into brain function. Andrew?
Yes, Master.
I mean, yes, Master.
How many times must I tell you? Science is egalitarian. There are no masters. Please, call me Herbert.
That doesn't really seem right to me. Can I just call you Dr. West instead?
If you must. Andrew, please prepare the irradiation chamber.
The what?
The irradiation chamber.
The
one I asked you to borrow from Emily's lab. It was on the list.
Yeah, about that. I sort of lost the list.
You lost it.
I dropped it.
You dropped it.
While running away.
While running away. What on earth from?
Dr. Caligari? I was doing just like you said, gathering up all the equipment on the list. Then, I heard the doctor coming out of her paralysis. Dr. Caligari was staggering towards me, moaning and wailing like she wanted to.
Don't tell me. Eat your brains.
Use the bathroom.
Ah. Ah, yes. Well, she does have her priorities. Well, there's no avoiding it then. We'll have to go back.
Won't she?
Mind? Certainly. Tried to kill us? Undoubtedly. But we do need that equipment. Radioactive material does not grow on radioactive trees, after all. Well, with luck, she'll have stepped out for the evening and we can work unhindered. If not, bring some rope. Come along, Andrew. If you would take up Miss Doe 753, she mustn't be late. After all, this is her life.
Come along, Miss Doe 5. Dr. West, I don't like talking to dead people.
You must get used to it.
All right. Come here. Dr. West, wait up. You know, she looks awfully familiar.
And so the intrepid Dr. West and the far less intrepid Andrew Snidge make their way toward the lair of the sinister and mysterious Dr. Caligari. What will they find there? Will they succeed in their task? Why does Jane Doe 753 seem so familiar? These questions will be answered next week in She's Alive. Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by the company you depend upon for all of your greatest needs, Heart Life. These stories are true dramatizations from our fair city's glorious history. So listen and remember, Heart Life, all the life you'll ever need. In our fair city, the opportunity to practice science is rare and coveted. A lucky few are privileged enough to serve as assistants, or even more frequently, equipment technicians. To be the leader of such endeavors requires an even more rare person, someone with ambition, drive, ability, and perhaps more importantly, a personality disorder. This is the lab of someone with all the right stuff. Blue light glows through the aqueous fluid, suspending many human brains in a large tank. The faint luminescence escaping the cerebral chamber falls over white enameled machines and polished metal surfaces. Nothing here stirs.
Oops!
Almost nothing, anyway. Above, inside the air duct, Andrew Snidge makes his way into the office. By sheerest luck, he manages to avoid setting off the elaborate and deadly traps the good doctor has placed within.
Uh-oh. Whoa! Oh! Hell!
By falling.
Dr. West, I'm in.
Very good, Andrew!
Woo-hoo!
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to frighten you. I never mean to frighten anyone. It just sort of happens. I can't imagine why.
But how did you get in?
Through the door! It wasn't hard to unlock. I was going to tell you, but you seemed so intent on crawling through the air ducts, I hadn't the heart to stop you. Ooh, would you look at that?
Sir, I think those brains are looking at us.
Lovely. Absolutely lovely. And quite the collection, too. So many unique specimens. My friend Victor would love a tank like this.
You have friends?
The reanimator community is quite small. If we were constantly doing battle with one another, there would be no community at all. We found it easier to be friends. Plus, you have someone to send cards to on the holidays. Now, shall we get started? Let's see. If I were a muon-powered irradiation chamber, where would I be? Ah, here it is. Andrew, if you would please put our guest inside. Let's see. Gamma rays, of course. Do you think alpha or beta radiation? Oh, what the hell? We'll splurge and do both. Set for 5 seconds. Now, Andrew, don't look directly at the chamber. There we go.
Dr. West, I looked at the chamber.
Of course you did. You're a scientist. Natural curiosity and all that. Here, put these glasses on. Just don't look down when you use the toilet and you'll be fine. Now, use the thermal resistor gloves.
You mean the oven mitts?
Yes, those. And bring her over here. Place her between the electrodes, please. Very good. Now, hand me the current transferal cord.
You mean the jumper cables?
Yes. Now, this goes on the right ear, and this goes on the left... No, wait, the other way. I always get that part confused. All right, we're ready. Andrew, on the count of three, throw the switch!
This switch!
No. You've switched off the lights.
Oops.
Try the other one. Excellent. One, two, three. And there we go.
How long will it take for her to come back?
Well, considering the infinite complexities of the brain and the delicate balances that have just been overloaded by immense amounts of foreign chemicals, dangerous radiation, and pure electricity, I'd say the better part of 3 days. Oh my, that is surprising. I don't blame you a bit for fainting, young Andrew. You just rest here, and I'll see to our new friend. Hello? Wakey, wakey.
What? Where am I?
It talks. I've never had one that talked before. Top of the morning to you, my dear. How are you feeling?
I feel horrible.
To be expected. Open up and say, ah.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Now, just put this under your tongue.
Ayla-aka?
Ah. No talking. Ah, very good. Let's see. 63.4 degrees.
I'm pretty sure that's only supposed to be used on turkeys.
Probably. But when was the last time anyone saw one of those? Now, what was it you wanted to ask me?
Are you a doctor?
Oh, my. Where are my manners? I am Dr. Herbert West. And you are?
Elizabeth. Elizabeth Rourke.
Very good, very good. I'd shake your hand if it wasn't back in my lab.
What?
Moving on. Do you remember what happened to you, Elizabeth?
I was in an office. There was a man, Chamberlain. He shot me, and oh God, Nathan!
Interesting. Emotional connections, memories. The ability to reason and make inferences based on past experience. It would appear the higher functions are all intact, which is amazing. Usually the irradiated sulfur melts the cerebrum.
Where's Nathan? He was in the office with me when I...
I'm afraid I found only you in the office, Elizabeth.
Well, part of you, anyway. Well, most of you, really.
I have to go. I have to find him.
Now, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Elizabeth. Especially now. First, we need to worry about getting you fixed up.
Oh, God. I can't feel my legs. Why can't I feel my legs?
Ah, yes. About that.
My arms, too. I can't feel my arms.
Yes, well, Elizabeth, I was hoping to ease you into this with a bit of a tete-a-tete, but I must tell you, there is a very simple reason why you cannot feel your body.
I'm paralyzed.
What? Oh, no. Really? Who gets paralyzed anymore?
Oh, thank goodness.
You can't feel your body because I amputated it.
What?
Look down.
What happened to my body?
Damaged beyond repair, I'm afraid. Oh, the arms and legs are all right, but the torso was almost a total loss. You have whoever shot you to thank for that.
I'm just a head. A head on a desk.
Yeah, sorry about that. Bit of a shock, I'm sure. I did try to ease you into it. Top of the morning. Don't get ahead. Tat-a-tat. Can't blame me for not trying.
What have you done to me?
Saved your life. Or given you a new one. I'm really not sure. You're actually the only, well, let's go with person, who has retained their mental faculties post-reanimation.
Reanimation?
Reanimation. Return from the dead. Post-geriatric care, if you will.
So, I was... am dead.
No. Well, yes. Technically. It all depends on your definition of life and, well, death.
Why? Why would you do that?
Why would any doctor heal a sick person?
I wasn't sick. I was dead.
Sick! Dead! Just a matter of degrees, really. 35.2, to be exact.
You cut off my head.
No. I amputated your body. Very different.
So what? I'm just supposed to sit next to your inbox and keep you company for the rest of my life? Or whatever this is?
What? No! I thought you understood.
Understood what?
This is the fun part. You get to pick out your body.
You said my body was beyond repair.
Oh, it is. Was. Is. It, well, your torso is. Was. We, meaning me, are going to replace your old torso with a new torso. Well, a slightly used torso. But an intact torso. I have a fine selection. All types. You can be petite, athletic, curvy, anything you like. Your legs and arms were fine, so we can use those again if you're still attached to them. Well, metaphorically speaking, of course. Or not. I have plenty to go around. Here, I brought a catalog.
Well, it would be nice to be a size 4 again.
That's the spirit. Let's see. What do you think?
Anything in a woman?
Ah, yes. Good point. Let's see.
I'm kind of hungry.
What am I thinking? You must be famished. You've had a big day. Let's get you some food.
I don't have a stomach.
All the better. You can eat all you want and not gain a pound.
Those things in the tank look good.
Oh. The brains? No. You don't want those. They're a bit too... feisty.
Did that brain just say, have at you?
Did it? Perhaps a low-level telepathic field as well. You are just full of surprises. Andrew? Ah, Andrew, good, you're up. Could you hand me yes, thank you. M'lady, your chariot awaits.
That's a duffel bag.
We'll just place you inside. Sneak you back to the lab, grab a bite to eat, and then we'll get you back on your feet. Or someone else's feet. It's up to you. Hold on in there.
But Nathan...
So, with his mission complete and Mrs. Rourke safely in hand, Dr. West and Andrew Snidge make their way back to Q-Deck. From within her canvas conveyance, one can only begin to imagine the thoughts which must command the attention of Mrs. Elizabeth Rourke. Where is she bound? What happened to her son? What will become of her? What happened to her son? What horrors await her? Keep listening as some of these questions are answered, and the story of our fair city continues.
You just heard Our Fair City, Season 2, Episodes 5 and 6, Herbert West, Prince of Denmark, and She's Alive, created by Heartlife Productions. For more episodes and information on this series, visit ourfaircity.com. You're tuned in to Midnight Audio Theater on member-supported WCBE 90.5 FM and HD in Columbus and 106.3 FM in Newark. We're streaming on the web at wcbe.org. Up next, to continue with the Shakespeare reference, something is rotten in the state of Denmark for Jack Justice as well. With an overeager client, snooping federal agents, and witnesses playing a game of kick the bucket, Jack and Trixie have their work cut out for them in this next installment of the Black Jack Justice series from Decoder Ring Theater. This is episode 34, The Devil You Know.
Once again, Decoder Ring Theater presents another page from the casebook of that master of mystery, that sultan of sleuthing, Martin Bracknell's immortal detective, Black Jack Justice, starring Christopher Mott as Jack and Andrea Lyons as Trixie Dixon, girl detective.
There's a popular notion that passes for wisdom that says it's better to deal with the devil you know than the devil you don't. Aside from making a nifty, if underused, slogan for re-election campaigns everywhere, I've never really seen the logic of that one. Not that there are many old saws that you couldn't argue with, given the time and inclination. Red sky at night, sailors delight. Red sky at morning, sailors take warning, for instance. Oh, I know full well that it refers to atmospheric conditions and the predicting of inclement weather patterns, but it's also dangerously dependent on how you interpret sailors delight. Or maybe that's just me. But as for our devils, known and otherwise, there was an onion in that ointment, too. If you deal with the devil you know, there is a comfort level to it. You have a general idea of what you're in for and how badly you're likely to come out. But there's always a chance, isn't there? Always an outside chance that the other devil, the one you don't know, isn't a devil at all, but a door-to-door pitchfork salesman with a bad skin condition. And if you don't spin the wheel, you'll never know, will you? Naturally, the preferred modus operandi would be to not deal with any sort of devil at all. To be the sort that favors plain speaking, honest dealing, and possible pious living for good measure. But the only chance there was of that ever happening would be for old Square John I to replace the hand-painted sign on the smoked glass window that read Justice and Dixon Private Investigations with another one that said, "Gone fishing forever. Please drop dead." And barring divine intervention or the demise of wealthy and previously unknown uncles, it didn't look like we were ever going to hang that one up. It had been a typical case, in that we'd floundered around blind for a while and got in hopelessly over our heads. And when that grand moment happened, given the choice between devils, we decided to split the difference. I decided to spin the wheel and hope for the pitchfork salesman, which left Jack in the clutches of the devil we knew all too well.
Justice, if you don't give me some straight answers, and I mean soon, I'm going to take my old nightstick out of retirement for one last rumba.
Don't do it, Sabian. I've got an awful hard head, and old Hickory has a wife and six popsicle sticks at home.
Let me ask you something. No joke.
Well, there's always a first time.
On average, what is the life expectancy of your clients?
See, this is why we take lost cat cases. Little old ladies pad the stats.
Cute. It's not enough you drop another corpse in my lap.
Lieutenant, hand to God, I just found it lying on the floor. What you do with them after you pick them up is none of my business.
You're not going to make me come over this desk, are you?
Boy, I sure hope not. I'm not sure it'd be that pretty.
I will say this very softly, and only once.
You'd like me to begin at the beginning?
In a nutshell.
Very well, then. Billions of years ago, the Earth cooled...
Justice!
Yes, dear?
Not that far back.
Ah. Why didn't you say so? Not to put too fine a point on it, but it was a day very much like any other. The office was still as a freshly minted corpse, and nearly half as charming. The girl detective was shuffling papers from her in-tray to her out-tray and back again, in the apparent hope that I would feel compelled to join her in a brisk round of pointless busy work. Fortunately, my resolve held firm in spite of the increasingly withering looks with which she attempted to catch my eye. In spite of this exercise, I had sufficient mental energy to gaze out the window and conduct a thorough rethinking of the career choices that had brought me to this point. But then where else could scratching the ears of mighty King the crime-busting dog constitute a good day's work? Sadly, this reverie was broken by the unexpected opening of the gray-green door that proclaimed the words Justice and Dixon, Private Investigations, to a largely disinterested world.
Good afternoon.
Is it already? Jeez, I worked right through my lunch.
I beg your pardon?
Please ignore him, sir. Lord knows I wish I could.
If this is a bad time...
Bad times are our bread and butter, sir. Please have a seat.
Well, I...
Can I offer you a cup of coffee, mister?
Lever. Harold Lever.
I'm Jack Justice. This is my partner, Miss Dixon.
Trixie, please. How can we help you, sir?
I find myself in a spot of difficulty, and as I'm a visitor to your fair city, I'm ill-equipped to resolve the matter entirely by myself.
Ah, the businessman's special.
I beg your pardon?
Don't be embarrassed, Mr. Lever. There's been quite a bit of this around lately. What hotel?
What?
What hotel? And do you know if the girl got pictures, or is it just her say-so?
Jack.
Mr. Justice, perhaps you could not understand me quite so quickly.
I'm sorry?
There is neither a hotel nor a girl in my story, sir.
Oops.
Smooth, Slick. Smooth. Why don't you put the coffee on like a good girl?
Yes, Mr. Dixon. Right away, Mr. Dixon.
Whoa. He just assumed Lever was being blackmailed?
What's that?
Your partner. Seems like a sensitive matter to blurt out like that.
It does, doesn't it? For the record, Agent Marino, these things have a rhythm to them. When you interrupt me, I lose my place.
My apologies. Carry on.
Are all feds this well-mannered?
They make us finish charm school before they give us our guns.
Aren't you gonna write any of this down?
You haven't said anything I can't remember yet, or that I might want to.
Fair point. In old Square Jaw's defense, he was right. There was a ring of business girls putting the squeeze on out-of-towners lately, and I don't just mean in the regular way. Jack and I were on pretty good terms with most of the local house dicks, and we've made a fair chunk of our recent chump change persuading the girls to lay off. Don't get me wrong, he jumped the gun, embarrassed our prospective client, and was, in no uncertain terms, an idiot. But that's not really the point. I settled Harold Lever into a chair and began to soothe him in the time-honored fashion, by taking a seat on Jack's desk opposite him and hypnotizing him with the slow, subtle swing of the girl detective's gumshoed gams. He was promptly pacified in a jittery sort of way and began to spill his story. It stood out from the usual standard in that it wasn't the least bit sordid and sounded like the whole truth and nothing but the truth, which of course made us instantly suspicious.
So you see, when the shipment was a week late, I made inquiries. The man at the depot in Potterfield says it never arrived. I've known him for years. He's very trustworthy. The man I bought the bats from says they shipped 2 weeks ago. He's out of state, but he's promised to send me a copy of his shipping invoice. There's nowhere else they could have gone.
Unfortunately, Mr. Lever, there are a number of places they could have gone, and someone seems to be taking advantage of that.
The truck carrying the shipment stopped at a warehouse here in the city. According to the shipping company, the crates were to have been moved from one truck to another and been en route to Potterfield in a day at most. But the man at the warehouse says he has no record of them ever arriving.
And you think he's lying?
What other explanation is there?
If you'd like us to find out, our fee is $39.95 a day plus expenses.
Of course. You will take a retainer.
We would normally request 2 days.
Yes, of course. $20, $40, $80.
Jack, would you draw up a contract for Mr. Lever?
Sure thing. I just have one or two questions.
Jack.
Hold your water, Trix. Mr. Lever, these 5 cases of baseball bats, how much are they really worth?
To me, they're worth a great deal, Mr. Justice. In a few weeks, everyone in the county will start preparing for the new baseball season. If they can't fill their entire order with us, what's to stop them from taking all their business elsewhere?
Sure, but...
We're a small town, sir. But there are other sporting goods stores in the county.
Yeah, but...
I have customers that have been buying from us since the store opened 12 years ago. If another store gains their trust and loyalty, I'd be ruined. The worth of these bats far exceeds the simple monetary value of these 5 crates. Though that in itself is considerable to a man of my limited means.
But the shipment wasn't insured.
No, sir.
Why not?
Jack, your receipt, Mr. Lever, and 10 cents is your change.
Oh, thank you.
Jack, is that contract ready?
Yes, Trixie. I typed it all up on my invisible typewriter.
I hate you.
Excellent. The insurance, Mr. Lever.
I have never had a problem like this before, Mr. Justice. I have ordered equipment from around the country without ever having to rely on the extra expense of insurance.
Possibly why someone tried to get fresh. If they recognized you for a small operator, they might have hoped to make a few extra dollars on the side without any insurance men poking around.
I hadn't thought of that. But since I have no proof which of 3 states the crime actually happened in, I feared the local police might be less than helpful.
Probably right. That's their slogan, less than helpful. stenciled right on the side of their prowl cars.
I'm sorry?
That rustle of carbon paper tells me that your contract is almost ready, Mr. Lever. We'll be in touch when we know something. I didn't like it. And for all her glowering over the typewriter, I could tell Trixie didn't either. Harold Lever's margins were too thin to shell out for insurance on the shipment, but he'd dropped $80 like we'd asked him for the lint out of his pockets. Since her ladyship had raised the rates, we hadn't had a single client that hadn't dickered us down to our original $35 a day. But not Mr. Lever. And the alleged crime was too screwy. I could see a shipment arriving a few bats light. That kind of thing can happen along the way. I could even see a whole crate going astray if there was a mistake or somebody got ambitious. But 5 crates? This was either a smudge on somebody's paperwork, or there was something in those crates other than bats. I didn't know which, but for all Trixie's worrying, I wasn't about to talk us out of a fee either. If Harold Lever wanted the warehouse investigated, investigated they would be.
Justice, for the love of my Aunt Minnie, would you come to something like the point? We haven't hit the first corpse yet, and I've already lost the will to live.
Don't despair, my dear lieutenant. We're coming to the warehouse. This is a good bit and features me at my most heroic.
Christmas.
We'd had an uncharacteristic bit of good luck. The shipping depot in question was attached to a warehouse on 38th Street. The owner's name was Russell Shorty McVetty, and since Shorty loved not wisely but too well, and too often, Old Squarejaw and I had handled his first, second, and fourth divorce jobs. We got the job done quickly and didn't pad the expense report enough so you'd notice, and that meant we were all right in Shorty's book. If our luck held, we would soon have a solid line on our client's missing shipment. And what do you think the odds of our luck holding were? Aren't you clever?
Can I help yous?
Is Shorty in?
Who's asking?
Jack Justice.
Never heard of you.
Tragic. I'll have words with my press agent. Fur shall fly, I assure you.
Get lost.
Is this how you talk to Mr. McVetty's friends?
Couldn't say. He don't seem to have a lot of them. What he does have a lot of is smart punks who come knocking. So blow.
You're starting to get under my skin, sonny.
Ain't that a crying shame?
Can I get a word in edgewise here?
Be my guest. He's not really my type.
So what's this? You bet your eyelashes at me and I'm supposed to play nice?
Oh, kitten. You don't really think I'd let you play nice that quickly, do you?
Well, I...
Nor am I inclined to bat my eyelashes at just anyone, you know.
I didn't. That is...
So now that you look closely, I'm sure you notice what full, lush eyelashes they are, aren't they?
Yeah.
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 Oh, Lord.
What's that?
Don't be jealous, Tiger. He means nothing to me.
What?
What's your name?
Vin.
Vin. Just like it says on your coveralls. I do like it when men wear labels. So much easier to keep them organized.
Yeah?
So, Shortian?
Sure. I guess so.
You guess so?
The light's been on in his office since before I got here.
I always thought he was more of a night owl.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of funny. But his door's closed. When Shorty closes his door, there's a good reason.
You mean you need a good reason to disturb him?
I guess so.
We're on the trail of some missing bats.
Bats? Like for baseball?
No, we're from the zoo.
What?
Yes, for baseball.
Oh. You feds?
Feds.
Why would we be feds?
Couldn't say. The last guy was.
Little guy? No chin?
Nah. He was here too, yesterday. Then the G-man last night.
Well, stop the case. I want to get off.
Why would the feds be sniffing around some missing baseball bats?
Couldn't say. But he flashed the badge, and that was good enough reason to knock on Shorty's door.
Now I know what trumps your eyelashes.
Stow it. You see a name on the badge?
Yeah. Marino. Why?
Anybody you know?
I don't move in those kind of rarefied circles, and I like it that way.
What's this about?
Well, you're never gonna find out standing here.
Hey! You can't go up there.
You could holler for the boys, Vin, but it's just going to get you a nice big hole in your head, all right?
Whoa!
Jack!
I'm just going to step inside and say hello to my old pal Shorty. Nice and simple.
Sure, sure. Don't get excited.
Thank you. Sorry to get pushy, kid. But if the suits are into this, I want off in a hurry. And the fastest way to do that is on the other side of this door. Oh.
What is it?
Trixie, be a dear and ring for Lieutenant Sabian, would you?
What is it?
What is it usually?
Oh.
What's wrong?
Don't get too excited, Tiger, but it looks like Shorty McVetty's been murdered.
You are listening to Blackjack Justice, another fine program from Decoder Ring Theater. Whether you are listening via podcast or through one of our broadcast partners, be sure to stop by our website, www.decoderringtheater.com, for all our latest episodes, information on upcoming shows, and much more. If you enjoy these programs and wish to see them continue, please consider making a small contribution through one of the convenient PayPal links on our homepage. And please do take the time to help us spread the word. Tell a friend, post a link, or take a moment to rate or review our programs through your podcast directory or service. And remember, wherever you may roam, DecoderRingTheater.com is your address for adventure, mystery, and comedy.
The life of a private detective isn't one that lends itself too much in the way of sentimentality. People come, people go, people stiff you on the bill. It's the way of it. And as much as we didn't like to incur the wrath of our local PD unless it was completely necessary, we placed a quick and careful call to Sabian's office, elicited a brief but heartfelt promise on the part of Vin the warehouse monkey not to touch a thing, and made tracks. As counterintuitive as it may seem, technically there was no reason to believe that Shorty McVetty's murder had anything to do with us. And that was a loophole we were counting on to protect our licenses as we raced away from the crime scene. There was no proof that it had anything at all to do with our client, his missing shipment of bats, or the mysterious interest of at least one federal agency in them, an interest that has still been largely unexplored and should perhaps be clarified at some point. Like now.
What was that?
That was your cue, Agent Marino.
Don't hold your breath. I'd hate to see you spoil that peaches and cream complexion by turning blue and passing out.
You're rude.
Thank you.
I forgive you because you're unusually pretty for a man.
Thank you again.
Oh, I didn't say I liked it. I just feel sorry for you is all. Where was I?
I'd have to check my program.
Yes. Jack and I made tracks to the hotel where our client, Harold Lever, was staying while he awaited word of his late lamented sporting goods. Our one lead, having recently had his brain splattered around his office by a large caliber bullet, we didn't have much to report. But if we were going to use business as an excuse for our departure, Jack reckoned we should probably actually do some. We rolled through the lobby of the Metrolite with a quick nod at the houseman, Alf McKinney, and rode up to room 414. Jack seemed intent on persuading Mr. Lever to make tracks back to Pawtucket or wherever the heck he'd come from, even if it meant parting with the retainer we had only so recently begun to enjoy. His love for a dollar was tempered by his unreasoning hatred for the feds, which made it all the more ironic when we found the door to room 414 slightly ajar and pushed it open to discover not our client, but a tall, too pretty stranger in a dark suit and sunglasses.
Hold it, pal.
Take it easy.
Give me one good reason why I should.
Got a badge in my pocket.
Reach for it, and you'll need to get your hats custom made.
What is it with you and shooting people in the head today?
What?
You shut up now. No one's talking to you.
No way this guy is one of Sabian's boys. Look at him. He's got a neck and everything.
What?
He does seem a delicate flower, doesn't he? Which pocket is the badge in, Agent Marino?
What?
What?
Don't both look so surprised. The boy at the warehouse said that was the name of the G-man that beat us to Shorty's place.
He isn't the only one that beat us to Shorty.
What does that mean?
It means Shorty's dead. So which pocket?
Jacket, inside left.
Drat. There it is. Don't see many of those.
Not without sending in box tops from my post-toasties.
Hilarious.
Nice little .32.
I'm glad you approve.
.32 is kind of a delicate gun, isn't it?
The .45's nice and subtle. Mind pointing it somewhere else now that we've established that pointing it at me is a felony offense?
Here we go.
So what do you think you're doing in Harold Lever's room?
Mind if I answer that question with a question?
Knock yourself out.
Who the blazes are you two?
Justice and Dixon. I'm Dixon. He's not.
You cops?
Detectives. Private.
Working for Harold Lever?
That's covered by the private.
Tough guy, huh? Where's your client?
See what he did there, Jack?
Almost tripped us up in that clever web of words, didn't he?
He did. He really did.
You two comedians, laugh it up all you like. If Shorty McVetty's been shot, it means one thing. Harold Lever's in way over his head.
Harold Lever is chasing sporting goods across the countryside.
Is that what he told you?
What does that mean?
It means you tell Mr. Lever that the only chance he's got is if he talks to me, and soon. The field's getting crowded. I can protect him. You tell him.
I don't much like playing errand boy.
Maybe you should have stayed in school. Here's the number of the hotel where I can be reached. Room 323 under Barton.
Why Barton?
Because Special Agent Marino wouldn't fit in the register. Don't keep me waiting.
So now we were in the middle of it, no two ways about it.
We had a client who was missing, or at least had the sense to duck out of the fire escape when the feds came calling. We had a G-man who expected us to produce same client, possibly on some sort of silver platter at our earliest convenience. And it was pretty clear that our client had been lying to us, which was hardly a new tune. But it never ceased to stick in my craw. We made our way back to our stylish offices for a rethink, maybe some lunch.
You want to order in?
I think we better stick to sandwiches. I don't foresee us getting our expenses on this one.
We got 2 days up front.
To do a job that's looking increasingly impossible.
We can't recover the bats because he's pretty clearly not looking for bats. That the idea?
It is, even if Shorty's death was unrelated.
Which it probably isn't.
Whatever makes 5 crates of sporting goods worth hiring detectives over is probably also what makes it interesting to Agent Marino.
If you read the contract, you'll notice that we're off the hook if he lied to us.
Since when?
Since I added that line to his contract. None of this made a lot of sense, and I thought it better safe than refund.
Fair enough. So we find him, tell him that Marino wants to see him, that he can go to blazes.
Not exactly the private detective's code.
We have a code now.
Sure, what of it?
Tricks. Let's assume for the moment that those 5 crates of baseball bats actually held 5 crates worth of baseball bats.
Right.
When is a baseball bat worth killing for?
When it's more than just a baseball bat?
Right. It looks innocent enough. All American, in fact. The perfect cover.
Smuggling?
Explains Marino's interest. What can you smuggle inside a hollowed-out baseball bat?
Diamonds?
Interesting, but I'm not sure they'd need 5 crates worth. That's a lot of ice.
It's drugs, isn't it?
Probably. It would explain why someone blew Shorty's head open rather than leave him around as a clue for the next guy. These people are ruthless.
So what do we do?
We throw the private detective's code out the window and turn Lever over to the feds. He's bound to come running to us when he realizes he can't go back to his hotel.
Jack?
Yeah?
I think he already did.
And that's when I saw the office door, jimmied open and still ajar. A push revealed the joint in greater disarray than normal. A whimper from behind the overturned sofa betrayed the location of a cowering but unharmed King, the crime-busting dog deluxe. And in the middle of the floor was Harold Lever, stone dead, strangled by the look of things, which makes a suicide unlikely. And that, my dear lieutenant, was when the girl detective and I went off the clock. And here we are. Will it pass?
More or less. Except for 2 things.
What, pray tell?
Where's Dixon?
Having this same conversation across town with Agent Marino.
What?
I tried to tell her that you wouldn't like playing second fiddle, but she was most insistent.
Get your hat!
What's the rumpus? So we split the difference.
I said get your hat! Now!
So that's it?
What else is there?
Your partner went to the police?
There was a corpse on the linoleum. He's funny that way.
Well, that's it then.
What? Case closed?
As you say. What else is there?
My client is dead, Marino. That usually means I'm off the case. I didn't know you got off so easy.
If Shorty McVetty didn't steal that shipment himself, he knew who did. But he didn't say a word. If a 2-bit hoodlum like Harry Lever didn't have a pretty good idea exactly who had his stuff, he wouldn't have made the trip down here, playing honest merchant. But if he said a word before he died, we don't know about it.
His stuff, huh? So it was drugs?
You're very clever, Miss Dixon. It was heroin, and worth a small fortune. There must be 6 players on the board. It's impossible to know who caught up with Lever in your office.
So you just punch out and go home?
My time is my own. Unless you'd care to let me take you to dinner.
Oh, my. Agent Marino, you cad.
I find this line of abuse encouraging.
How about this one?
That feels suspiciously like a gun muzzle in my stomach.
Maybe if I redirect it slightly to the south, you'll know just how much I want you to keep your hands where I can see them.
Don't do anything crazy.
I'll just help myself to the 32, if you don't mind. Now step back, nice and slow.
What's that?
My heroic rescuers, I expect.
Trix! Dixon!
Hello, boys. Jack, be a dear and check Agent Marino's gun, would you? I think you'll find it loaded with soft-tip bullets.
Bingo. That's what made us think it was a larger caliber that got McVetty. These dum-dums make an exit wound the size of a fist.
Mm-hmm. But what brings you boys by?
We had a little help. A John Doe in our morgue was just ID'd as...
The real Agent Marino? That takes some nerve.
I just kept the badge for kicks. You're the geniuses that assumed I was really Marino.
He's got a point.
Don't he just, though? You clever dicks.
We have our moments. Or at least one of us does.
Hey.
When I repeated the whole story for Laughing Boy here, I realized that we'd never told him how Shorty got his lumps. But he already knew that McVetty had been shot, which made it seem like he was the shooter, and he never said a thing to convince me otherwise. When he started getting friendly, I figured it was probably an excuse to put a bullet in my head before going after Jack, the only other person who could ID him.
Remind me again, why exactly did I try and put a stop to this?
Aw, Lieutenant. I didn't know you cared.
Ah, Christmas.
And so it went. Sure, we didn't exactly come off looking like Sherlock Holmes, but in this business, at the end of the day, you count your fingers, your toes, and the money in your pockets. Finding the heroin in the baseball bats and any other number of needles in the haystack was Sabian's problem. With the phony Agent Marino to knock around, maybe he had a chance. We had Lever's 80 bucks, our pictures in the paper, and a citation from the federal government that old Squarejaw had framed and hung over my desk. Mostly to remind me that the devil we knew was usually better than the devil we didn't. Usually.
Blackjack Justice, Episode 34, The Devil You Know, was written and directed by Greg Taylor and starred Christopher Mott and Andrea Lyons, with additional voices supplied by Hans Messerschmidt, Kevin Robinson, Greg Taylor, and Peter Nickel.
This recording and the story, characters, and situations depicted within are the property of their author and creator and protected by copyright. Until next time, remember, DecoderRingTheater.com is your address to adventure.
Again, that was episode 34, The Devil You Know, of Black Jack Justice by Decoder Ring Theater. For more information, episodes, and other series, visit DecoderRingTheater.com. You've been listening to Midnight Audio Theater on Central Ohio's NPR station, WCBE 90.5 FM and HD in Columbus, and 106.3 FM in Newark. We're broadcasting from atop Levesque Tower and over the World Wide Web at wcbe.org. And again, that's it for tonight, folks. If you only caught part of our show tonight, or just want to hear more from the many production groups we featured on this show, you can always go to our website at midnightaudiotheater.com. And as always, if you have any thoughts, concerns, suggestions, or fancy scone recipes you'd like to share with us, feel free to email us at midnightaudiotheater@gmail.com. We'd be happy to hear from you. So, until next week, audio drama fans, same bat time, same bat channel. I'm Kathy Ranella. Thanks for tuning in. BBC World News is up next.